Good morning. This hearing will come to order. I thank my colleagues and Mr. Kennedy for being here today. Mr. Kennedy, congratulations on your nomination.
Nearly a year ago, Robert Kennedy Jr. was the nominee to run the Department of Health and Human Services. At his confirmation hearing, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren had a lot to say.
No one should be fooled here. As Secretary of HHS, Robert Kennedy will have the power to undercut vaccines and vaccine manufacturing across our country. And for all of his talk about follow the science and his promise that he won't interfere with those of us who want to vaccinate his kids, the bottom line is the same. Kennedy can kill off access to vaccines and make millions of dollars while he does it. Kids might die, but Robert Kennedy can keep cashing in.
Kennedy responded with something that sounded like a pledge.
Senator, I support vaccines. I support the childhood schedule.
The next day, he seemed to reiterate that pledge during questioning about the human papillomavirus vaccine from Senator Patty Murray of Washington State.
You said that no loving parents would allow their daughter to receive that vaccine. If confirmed as HHS Secretary, would you recommend that parents get their children vaccinated against HPV?
I recommend that children follow the CDC schedule. And I will support the CDC schedule when I get in there, if I'm fortunate enough to be confirmed.
That was January 30th, 2025, and we all know the rest of the story. Kennedy was confirmed, and on January 5th, 2026, he dramatically reduced the number of vaccines recommended by the Centers for Disease Control. CBS News reporter Nancy Cordes asked him about that.
Here's the promise that you made to Congress when you were going through your confirmation process. You said, I will support the CDC vaccine schedule when I get in there. Isn't this a violation of your promise?
No, we are. This is the CDC vaccine schedule, and I am supporting it.
So, but I don't think that that's what senators took you to mean, that you would go ahead and change it.
Well, of course, I'm going to change it.
So here we are with a new childhood vaccine schedule from the CDC. If you're a parent, what vaccination should you get for your child now? Ones from the old list or only those on the new list? I reached out to a practicing Texas pediatrician and asked him to walk me through it like I was a new parent and not the mom to a fully vaccinated adult. Stick around to hear what he had to say. From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/BHC.
Good morning and Happy New Year, everybody. It's great to see you. It's great to be with a very packed room. I'm sorry we kept you all.
On January 7th of 2026, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt stood in the briefing room, surrounded by a gaggle of Trump administration health policy appointees, including Robert Kennedy.
On Monday, the CDC adopted common sense updates to America's childhood vaccination schedule based solely on the gold standard of science. This action empowers parents and physicians to make the best individualized decisions to protect our children, while also restoring much-needed confidence in our public health system.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack in those two sentences. And to help me do that, I'm joined by Dr. Jason Turk, general pediatrician practicing in North Texas. He's also a past president of the Texas Pediatric Society.
Hello.
Hi, doctor. Okay, let's start with how the vaccine recommendation process typically goes and how we came to have a schedule in 2025 that recommended vaccination against 16 different diseases in around 45 doses over several years. Additionally, a flu shot was recommended every year. Now, the CDC recommendations matter because they've historically guided state mandates. So how was all of that accomplished?
So for many, many years, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the CDC have had a unified schedule for vaccinations. Pretty much all been on the same page. And the reason for that harmonization has been that heretofore, both of the entities have approached these questions in the same fashion, which is, what do we see in the way of a need for protecting against a particular disease and gathering the evidence and the science to support a recommendation? So it's sort of like a ground up type of process. And that really changed with this administration starting at the beginning of this year. From the time that the current Health and Human Services Secretary was appointed, it's been more of a top-down. Here is my expectation, and this is how we want to have things happen. Now you find the reasons for us to do this particular thing. And so we now are unfortunately in a situation where we have mixed messages, and the previously credible bodies that we relied upon, like the CDC, are no longer credible because they're not doing things in a way that's science-based and evidence-based.
All right, let's dive into what we have now. CDC has gone from recommending routine vaccination from those 17 diseases down to 10. Routine means when you're in the hospital after you have a baby, they offer you the first few. And then when you go back to the pediatrician for various wellness checks, they'll say, okay, today is the day for dose one of the MMR. What do you think, parent? On board? So that's routine. Now, only 10 of those diseases will get that sort of routine treatment, right? So how does this work now?
So they created two additional categories. One is a category in which a vaccination should be given only to specific high-risk groups. And then the other was a group of vaccinations that can be provided. They're not generally recommended, but can be provided through shared clinical decision-making. And some vaccinations actually occupy both of those categories. So when you're talking about the immunization that we now provide to protect babies from RSV, you have to kind of dig into it a little bit, but ultimately, every baby is at risk for RSV infection whose mother did not get a maternal RSV vaccine during her pregnancy. And so the actual reality of that particular one is not going to change what we do, except for the effect that it has on families when they see this is not a recommended vaccine. I've got a healthy baby. I don't need this particular intervention. So it achieves what they're trying to achieve, which is undermining confidence. It makes us have to have much longer conversations about why we recommend this.
And RSV is a bad disease for a baby to have. I did a whole show on it a couple of years ago. Dr. Turk says one of the big moments in his career as a pediatrician came when he was able to offer his patients a way to prevent RSV,
which is the leading cause of hospitalization in babies in their first year of life. So while people are worried about whether they should make the right decision about an RSV immunization that needs to be given literally within days of birth, they could potentially get infected while they're trying to figure out what the right thing to do is. And families are confused.
Also off the routine list, rotavirus, meningococcal disease, flu, hepatitis A, hepatitis B was removed in September, and parents are confused. So let's see if we can demystify some of this for them. From the administration, we've been hearing a few catchphrases over and over again, like gold standard of science and shared decision making. So let's start there. What is shared decision making?
Well, we have shared clinical decision making all the time. There is this erroneous narrative that says that people are having these things done to them without their consent. We have conversations about what we're doing. Every time I provide a vaccination, I say, here's what your child is due for, and it protects against this particular disease. And then the family signs a consent for what we're doing. It is wrong to say that we don't have shared clinical decision making. We do that all the time. And then the other terms that are being bandied about, those are just brands and marketing types of statements that have nothing to do with what really happens in the context of the doctor-patient relationship. We don't practice any different metal science. We practice, it's not gold standard science, it is science that we operate under. And obviously there's different qualities of evidence and we understand that, but that's certainly something that's taken into consideration when it comes to any recommendation for a preventive intervention or therapeutic intervention.
In this context, shared decision-making means a parent can't just take their kid to a pharmacy and get a flu shot. They have to go to the doctor and share that decision-making, which is an extra step. It takes time, it takes money, it's a complication that will reduce the number of kids who can actually get the flu shot. And that seems to me to reduce parental choice rather than protect it. Now, Kennedy said this overhaul is a response to a mandate from President Trump to go look at what they're doing in Europe and see if that's what the CDC ought to do. Maybe we should be more like Denmark.
Then what you're going to end up with are children who get sick and some of whom may die because they're not getting protected because we're not Denmark.
More on that when Petri Dish continues.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio's Mays Cancer Center, South Texas NCI-designated cancer center, providing cancer care for patients, advancing research, and educating the next generation of leaders. Mays Cancer Center is working to end cancer in South Texas and beyond. Learn more at mayscancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri. Back to January 7th, 2026, Kennedy was in the White House press briefing room and he took a question on how he would get blue states to come to heel on the new CDC recommendations, sort of make them obey. He didn't answer that question, but he did explain a bit about why he says he ordered these changes.
We release guidelines that we think are optimal to public health. They're the same core vaccines that are required by the European community. And those nations all have much better health outcomes than we do.
We've been talking with Dr. Jason Turk, a general pediatrician practicing in North Texas and a past president of the Texas Pediatric Society.
They claim that they did a survey of so-called peer nations and peer countries. But if you look at our peers, the United Kingdom, Germany, and Spain, what they've done is not consistent with what they have. If you look at our population and compare it to Denmark, we're a country of over 300 million people, compared to theirs are 6 million. And they are almost 80% monoethnically Danes, 100% of whom have 100% access to healthcare. And so they have a system of care in a terrain and an environment that is completely different than us. And so if you try to put the Denmark schedule in the United States, then what you're going to end up with are children who get sick and some of whom may die because they're not getting protected because we're not Denmark.
We're not Denmark. And as Dr. Turk noted, Denmark is actually the outlier, not the United States. Our original schedule targeted 17 diseases. Germany's vaccine schedule targets 16. The UK targets 15. Beyond Europe, Australia targets 15. Japan targets 14. Back here in North America, Canada targets 17 like we used to. And Mexico targets 16 with its childhood vaccine program. Denmark only targets 10. And when Kennedy suggests that the superior health of Danes is linked to the low number of vaccines Denmark requires, it's important to remember correlation does not equal causation. And most of those European countries with which Kennedy wants to align do have something in common, and it's not the small number of recommended vaccines. What is it? Universal health care. All right, Dr. Turk, what impact might that have on the differences between the amount of chronic disease in Europe versus the United States?
Well, if you don't have access to care, then you don't have routine engagement with the healthcare system to guide you on healthy living habits with respect to your nutrition and fitness and exercise and routine the screenings that we need to have to protect ourselves from potential chronic disease. And then once you start having problems, then your access points are not as reliable. You end up going to the emergency department for a particular problem, and they find a whole bunch of other things. And for many, in many cases, they're related to chronic obesity or chronic lung disease from tobacco use or whatever it might be. So access to care is a critical variable that impacts upon our ability to provide preventive care that's necessary to protect against chronic diseases. And it also is a lack of access to care means that when you do get sick, you're sicker when you present and you're ending up going to an access point, which is ill-equipped to manage those things as well as it might be.
Okay, so let's pretend I'm a brand new parent in your office with my first brand new baby, and I'm overwhelmed with all of this conflicting information. What do you say to me?
So what I would say is, number one, reinforcing the fact that you and I, pediatrician and parent, have the same goal, which is protecting your child from things that potentially could harm her. We're in the prevention of bad things from happening business in pediatrics. And I think in that respect, moms and dads and pediatricians share the same goals. And to accomplish that goal, one of the things we really need to do is to protect your baby from diseases that potentially could be quite deadly, and that we know your baby will be at risk without the vaccinations. So at that point, I would explain what we need to do today. And if they have questions about what's coming up in the future, we talk about what that looks like. And if they have specific questions about any one particular vaccine or disease that we're protecting, we talk about those things.
All right, so now we know what vaccines the CDC recommends in 2026. What do you, Dr. Turk, Texas pediatrician, recommend in 2026?
I tell families, and I've actually messaged this through our Epic Blast message process, and I say, I know you're confused, and I know you must be wondering what the heck's going on. And nothing has changed, nothing will change with how we recommend vaccinations and why we recommend them, which will be based upon good science. And so the American Academy of Pediatrics is going to be what we're going to be using going forward, because that's reliable and credible. And so if you want more information about that, here's your resources. Here's where you need to go.
Resources. Okay, knowing where to find resources you can trust right now is so important, because the information ecosystem is siloed. I live in this silo and you live in that silo, and we don't have access to any of the same information. We really live in almost entirely different realities.
It's really, really, really hard right now, because there's so much information out there, and the average parent might be subjected to all kinds of information. And it is subjected because of the algorithms that get fired at them based upon the biases of what we're consuming. And so it gets reinforced. And so ultimately, a parent may not understand that what they are consuming is not evidence-based and is agenda-based instead. And it's really sort of what I like to consider to be information contamination. They're contaminated with misinformation, which is information which is wrong. And even worse, they're contaminated with disinformation, which is information that's intended to deceive. And so I do my best to try to educate my families about what good resources they can find online. We used to be able to say, go to the CDC website. We can't say that anymore. So instead, what we tell them is the American Academy of Pediatrics has an excellent parent information website called healthychildren.org. And so we use that a lot. And then the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia has a vaccine information center that is fantastic. It covers what the diseases are, what the vaccines are, what's in the vaccines, what the controversies that have been mentioned are, what the facts are about those things. And so people who want to go down a particular rabbit hole but get factual information, that's a great place to go. And then I always tell them, I'm here for you. When you have additional questions, please ask me. That's what I'm here for. It's going to take time, but I'm invested in your child, and that's what I'm here for.
Thank you so much, Dr. Turk. That's Dr. Jason Turk, general pediatrician in North Texas, also a past president of the Texas Pediatric Society. This This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jacob Rosati, TPR Vice President of News Dan Katz, and me. I wrote the show, Jacob composed all the music, created the sound design, and edited the script. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petrie. Talk to you soon.